Hello, everyone, and welcome to our TV, movie, and trailer reviews podcast brought to you by TPENetwork.com. I'm Hank.
And I'm John.
And we're your hosts. And this time we're going to be talking about our spoiler-filled review of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. So I initially, honestly, was not going to go see this movie until it hit Blu-ray. But John spoke so highly of it that I said, you know what? Let me carve out a little time, catch an early show on a day off, and let's get into what I thought and what John thought on the show. Let's, as we always do, start out with the setting. I absolutely love the approach they took to this movie as far as it almost looked like CG a little bit, but it still had some sort of drawn elements to it or coloring, and it looked phenomenal to me.
I really liked how they did the coloring, because if you pay attention to it, you had a comic book feel. You had it looked like it, and it, you know, it kind of behaved like it when you went from scene to scene. But the coloring of it, I mean, that was just one of those things that stuck out to me, and I'm like, I know why they did that. They're doing such a good job with this.
And I wasn't looking for like landmarks for the city and such, but the city itself looked expansive, and it felt like I was at the top of the building when they were at the peaks of buildings, and everything felt bustling and alive and vibrant. There was really no letdown having it be an animation. Would you like to start getting into some characters, John?
Where do you want to start?
Obviously, we can't cover them all, but we'll hit the high notes. Let's start with Miles Morales himself. The character's looks like one of my nephews, and that just instantly made me like the character, because he didn't necessarily act like Marquise, but he had the look of Marquise, and I just thought that was the funniest thing. And the way he was so into his uncle is like, you know, not to pat myself on the back, but that's how Marquise looks at me, is like Uncle Aaron in the good light anyway. And just wants to be around and wants to hang out and wants to talk and stuff. So I really identified with that relationship and with the Miles Morales character overall. I liked it. He also gave me a vibe of the actor from Cloak and Dagger. He kind of gave me that vibe too. So what about you?
Well, first I want to say, so are you moonlighting on us? Do you have a secret identity here where you're running around and working for Fisk?
Well,
because that's what that uncle did there.
Let's just say what I do on the side is a little bit shocking.
that's a knee slapper. Miles Morales, like the actor that they got to play it. Everyone, before we actually really dive into this any further, let's let you know that I'm like head over heels ecstatic for this movie. So it's probably going to be nothing but praise that comes out of me. So I'm going to try and think of other things I could say that isn't going to be something like, oh my God, it was just mind blowing the entire time. But how they did Miles and his interaction like with his dad and with his mom. And actually, I have to say that I think that his mom was his relationship with his mom, that was a little downplayed, and they probably should have done a little bit more of that. But exactly with his relationship with his uncle, and they did such a good job just making everyone be able to relate to him.
Agreed. They skip over on IMDb anyway. They kind of skip over the Peter Parker in the universe and go to the Peter B. Parker because he had a bigger role, obviously. But just to kind of put a bow on the Peter Parker in Miles's universe. Disturbing or what, that he just gets taken out early?
Well, I mean, I was more concerned because he had blonde hair. So that right there is kind of a callback to whenever we had the clone saga in Spider-Man with our I forgot what that Spider-Man's called. Anyway, he was Ben Parker's what he was going by. I can tell you that, but he was blonde. He was trying to identify himself as somebody, not Peter Parker. So it's kind of tragic. And you know, I also like having like Fisk have that like, you know, thing there towards the end where it's kind of like, you know, honoring him just and having Mary Jane up there. That was just one of those things where you're like, oh, man, they're really doing some deep digs right here, aren't they?
Definitely. Gwen Stacy, I thought her character was really well done. Typically, when they try to do the flirty teen couple stuff, it usually doesn't land well with me, but I know Cloak and Dagger, it worked well. And for this movie, it worked very well. I thought those two being paired, you know, as this little bit of a tension between them, I thought it was really well done. And I liked her character. She really seemed together and believable.
She's downright one of my favorite characters in the entire movie. From everything that I could tell, they've got her pretty much right on the money of how she's supposed to be, act, and look.
I can't think of the actor's name offhand, or actually, I can't remember how to pronounce it. But Uncle Aaron, the actor that was doing the voice for him, is a really an accomplished actor. And I remember him from the 4400, and he's been on a lot of different things, and he's a great actor. He executed the dynamic between him and Miles perfectly through voice, and I loved it. Loved that character.
I really don't have too much more to say to that. I agree with exactly what you said there.
And then Miles's dad, another home run. Loved their relationship. You know, just how he's like, I love you over the over the speaker on the police car in front of everybody. You know, it's just what a cool way to make a movie that is going to reach all sorts of ages, but maybe more geared towards a younger audience, or may captivate more of a younger audience, that, hey, it's cool to love your dad and say it, you know. So I really liked that message, and I liked his character throughout.
Yep, that's a copy.
Aunt May, did they make her like sleeve roll up, kick butt in this one more so? I felt like.
Yeah, no, they really did. Like, basically, you're really going into this that she knew everything that was going on all along, to be able to not only, you know, not be wowed by all the stuff that she'd, you know, that's in the spider lair, but, you know, when everybody else shows up and she's just like, eh.
One character that really took me by surprise was the twist with Doc Ock. And at first I was like, eh. And then as it went on, I was like, this is masterful. You know, because we all knew who, you know, comic book fans anyway, understood where they were going to go immediately with Uncle Aaron. You know, I sat there and I was like, oh, I know where this is going. But with that one, I was kind of like, oh, okay, that's a little different take on it. And it was not bad to me.
Yeah, whenever they had that moment where she was like, oh, I can't let you leave. I got to watch you fall apart. And I was just like, whoa, what's going on here?
I'm going to watch you die, essentially. Because there were a ton of kids in the theater I was in. And I was like, I don't know if this is 100%. Geared towards little kids, because there's some hardcore stuff in there. And one kid behind me goes, is he dead? When Spider-Man got pounded into the ground, I was like, ew.
Hey, nice callback, because that Spider-Man was voiced by Chris Pine.
And I did not know Chris Pine was the voice until I looked on IMDb. That was one that I was like, I heard Nicolas Cage and some of the other ones, but
let's talk about that character.
Okay, Spider-Man Noir.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage basically playing Nicolas Cage.
He plays himself in everything. He is he is a caricature now in Hollywood. Really well done, though. I like how he was pretty dark and hardcore too.
They're like, where's this wind coming from?
It follows me. Some of the other alternate spider people, will say, just
Penny Parker.
Yes, I loved her.
Listen, I'll have to say, she's an underwritten character there. I did so much back research just on that character alone, because I'm like, who is this that I've never heard of Penny Parker? So, you know, and just going back through the history that, you know, Peter Parker was her dad, and like he made this like robotic like spider suit that was powered, or yeah, I guess the processor of it was with a radioactive spider. But the only way that you can run the unit is if you bonded with that spider, and the spider had to accept you. So she was able to do it because it was originally made for. Yeah, it was like super long and complicated. But after reading it, I'm like, OK, I get it now. So that's the reason why she has that relationship with the little spider there at the end, and she's hanging on to it, because the thing was genetically engineered to run that suit, and it was basically bonded to her father before he died.
Okay. And Spider-Ham was comic relief, in my opinion.
Oh, dude, that line at the end where he hands him the hammer, he was like, it'll fit in your pocket.
Wilson Fisk, a little bit dark for this. I thought that was true to the character, but man, I kind of assumed that they would dial it back a little bit, but I was clearly wrong.
Well, I mean, you know, he pulled out some good old fashioned saber tooth for us.
Any other characters you want to talk about?
You know what? I'd have to say, if anything, I'm kind of upset that they left out J.J. Jameson.
He was in the after credits, though, correct?
He was?
Yeah, he was standing next to the cop and they were arguing over who pointed at which Spider-Man pointed at the other Spider-Man first.
Okay. But I guess I'd have to say that, you know, with their character selection that they had, you know, you really couldn't ask for anything more besides one other Spider-Man that I was kind of disappointed that wasn't in the movie until I got to the end.
Oh, okay.
And we could bring him up since we're doing the spoiler fill, having our Spider-Man 2099 show up and voiced by none other than Poe Dameron.
Yes, you kept wanting him to get to the ship. But he did.
When I started getting a comic book, so I was there when the 2099 series came out. So, like, you know, that's a big part of my growing up. So seeing that Spider-Man there, I know that he's always been, like, you know, part of the multiverse, because he's a different take on how Spider-Man. And I'm not going to go into the entire, like, background of him, but because because now that he's been brought into it, and then his AI was able to, you know, explain to him how to use the multi-vector jump through the different worlds, then, you know, this is, I mean, we already know we're getting a sequel, but it's setting it up so easily for a sequel now that we have him in play. But I guess we could steamroll right into where he ends up first. Was it 1963, I think, is where he goes, or 53?
Oh, yes. Back with the old school Spider-Man.
And the cartoon, and he's sitting there. And basically, this is one of the reasons why this movie was so good. It not only called out to every single live action movie they've basically done, it called out to the comic book, and even called out to the ridiculous meme, Spider-Man memes at the very end of it, with that entire, like, you know, why are you pointing at me? Stop pointing. No, you're pointing at me.
That was great.
Oh, my gosh.
Pointing first.
I lost it. That was perfect.
It was funny. And the artwork was spot on for those old school cartoons and books.
That's actually already a normal cartoon. There is a cartoon where there's a Spider-Man pointing at a Spider-Man. The only thing they did was just basically superimpose 2099 Spider-Man on top of him. But it just so happened to work out. But that's perfect because, again, it's giving what everybody wants, and that is a recognition to the meme hilarity that it is.
True. Well, let's jump into some wins, shall we? Win-wise, I think that the music, like you told me prior to, which I'm not sure if that was a good thing or not, but the music was phenomenal. That soundtrack is a bunch of songs that you want or have already in your collection. I thought it was stellar.
Well, I mean, I already knew that going into this is going to be a very big, like, graffiti hip hop relation to, like, you know, where Miles is coming from. But yeah, but when they're like, they came back to, like, Miles going to his uncle's apartment and they were dropping Biggie, I was like, whoa, man, they're just grabbing everything here, aren't they?
Like I said earlier, the artwork, just the capturing, like, the speed and the animation and the colors. And everything they included in the visuals, I thought worked at the highest level.
And one of the things that I think that they did right is that you went into this as it's a movie, but how they showed you how things happened, it was very much like reading a comic book. Like whenever he started thinking in his head, we're like, that was, how funny was that? Whenever everything started popping up as a bubble above his head, he's like, why am I thinking so loud? Yeah. But I mean, now you basically went from watching like a normal movie, and now we're into a comic book. Like things are pausing, and frames are shifting, and you're getting boxes upon boxes, and word bubbles, and thought processes, and squiggly lines, and all kinds of stuff that are, you know, you're getting from these comics, and the thing is, it works, and they put it together so well. And this is one of the things that I'm going to take this back to the very first time that they made a Hulk movie. And I know that's a terrible movie, but one of the things that I actually did like about the movie is the fact that they did the movie like it was a comic book, and they segmented sections of the movie into separate windows, and it was like you're reading panel by panel while watching a movie. And they did, and even though that was a terrible movie, that was something that was unique, and I haven't seen them do anything like that since, until now. And this is terrific how they framed it all.
You didn't like Hulk dogs?
It was more or less, I didn't like his dad turning into, I don't know, what was it? Like, he was like an energy beast or something like that.
Yeah, we won't go down the rabbit hole on that trash bin movie. Another win that I thought for this movie was the story arc of the main character. What a really good way to introduce us to the character and then develop him throughout each act. I thought they did a phenomenal job. It was nearly perfect to me.
Well, let's not even just stop there. What about how they introduced all the other characters into this, and they basically gave you their rundown in what, like a minute?
Oh, like less than that. Yeah.
You knew what was going on with them in a minute. You're like, okay, that's perfect. Thank you. Well, why can't all the movies do this for, like, when they're trying to give you some foreshadowing of what happened or where they came from or what their world is? And it's that was genius.
Another win is I feel like they didn't take themselves too seriously. So it really lent itself to the story when you can kind of step back and have them make fun of themselves a little bit. You know, not, it wasn't over the top Deadpool or anything like that, but it was just enough to kind of let you just use your imagination and kind of draw you back to being a kid. That's what I was sitting there feeling like, was like, oh, when I was a kid thinking about stuff, I would have thought about it like Miles Morales is thinking about it right now.
Well, let's also take a moment from the movie where Spider-Ham or whatever, he jumped into the portal and was like, that's all, folks. And they're all like, is he allowed to say that?
That was one of the best lines of the entire movie.
Because, I mean, that was one of the things with Spider-Man where he wasn't directly like Deadpool, where he's breaking the fourth wall, but he comes darn near close to breaking the fourth wall all the time. And in this movie, they were rocking right on that, the knife edge there on, like, you know, are we going to break the wall, or are we going to try and make sure that it's contained in itself? So I really appreciated that, you know, giving you that feel.
I thought the resolution of this movie worked. Because sometimes in these types of movies, the resolution doesn't make much sense, but I thought it made sense in this one, and it left enough wiggle room for future movies without it feeling like they're going to have to force things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially since we already know that there's more movies in the works. And you know what? If they're all going to be put together like that, I don't care who they from the Spider-Verse that they want to pull and put into a movie. In fact, I think Sony should just stop the production of everything that they're doing and just go to this format, because I do believe that they could probably get a lot of money out of it due to the fact that it'll also be, I mean, you do it for PG-13, but it's enjoyable. You go to, as an adult, going and see it and watching it with my son, I enjoyed the whole thing.
They found their niche, in my opinion, with this.
Yeah, but they won't do it.
No, they won't listen. You know, obviously we could go on and on with wins and such, but I'd like to switch to any problems that may have come up. For me, like one of the things, it was not necessarily a problem per se, but theater was littered with kids and some of the subject matter was a little heavy for really little kids. So I don't know if they did a good enough job of making that distinction of, yes, this is an accessible movie, but there will be some mature type subject matter.
Wow. I didn't think that this would come from you.
Yeah, it is, because there were really tiny children sitting around me, and hearing them, almost like the shock of them seeing certain scenes, it kind of bothered me.
Well, it's just like our childhood, right? We've already been exposed to it. You know, we go to watch Transformers in 1985, and then you see Optimus Prime die, and nobody knew that was going to happen. And next thing you know, all the parents are like having to console their children because, you know, they just watched their idol and suit and her hero die on the screen.
That really disturbed me. I do remember that exact day. I remember being like, what? No.
Yeah. Optimus Prime can't die.
No.
Who's this pretender Rodimus Prime? So, but yeah, but I you know what? I agree with you. It's, you know, I think that, and although it was slated for PG-13, wasn't it?
It is. But what I'm saying is that I don't feel like they made the distinction to people going to see it. I don't think parents wittingly were like, you know what? I want my kids to watch, you know, the Spider-Man in Miles Morales' world get smashed. Because the kid behind me was like, is he dead? And I was just like, ooh, oh, that was kind of vicious for, you know, for this kind of a movie. Because we just have that inherent belief that when you see an animated movie, it's supposed to be not necessarily Adult Swim.
Yeah.
Any other problems that you can think of that bothered you in the slightest?
No, I really thought this was a solid movie all the way around. I mean, they even gave you that heart like felt moment when they're like with Miles Morales talking to Stan Lee in the comic shop.
Goodness. Dude,
I almost teared up. I'm not going to deny it. I mean, it was really heartfelt. Then they had that moment at the end where you're like, no refunds. You're like, thank you for bringing me back because I was getting sad there for a second.
Yes, that was, I'm so glad you brought that up. That was a great moment of the movie. I caught a glimpse of somebody walking over Miles when he was laying in the street and it looked like that Stan Lee character. Did you catch that?
Yeah, no, he was back again. He ended up walking. I think he did walk by again. But okay. Yeah, he was in there twice. It was him in the his shop and then him like wandering around, because then he said something and I really can't remember what he said. But
yes. And I love how they played on the with great power. Cause don't you say that. Don't you finish that. I love that because, you know, it's just like let you know, like Spider-Man fans already know this story and that's cool. But yeah, the Stan Lee cameo, phenomenal.
There is one more cameo. Well, it was more like a callback in the background. So apparently, if you were watching, I'm trying to remember where it was. If I do believe that on the TV in the background in Miles's uncle's house, you ended up seeing the spider. There's like a person in like Spider-Man PJs. That's supposed to be the throw out to Donald Glover because he wanted to play Miles Morales and has always wanted to. In fact, in the Spider-Man Homecoming movie, he plays this uncle.
Yep, the Prowler.
Yep. Yeah, and so, but that was a callback to you know him from Community whenever he was running around in the Spider-Man like pajamas. So. That was like a little Easter egg that they threw in there.
Nice. All right, let's roll into ratings, John. What are you giving this movie?
Oh, this is a 10, dude. I'm set. It's a 10.
I couldn't agree more. From the music to the storyline to the room for more story to be told, the harshness of Wilson Fisk to the relationship building between Gwen and Miles, and then Miles and his parents, and the relationship between Miles and his uncle, just all the threads that he weaved in this movie were done to perfection. Every voice actor hit every spot as far as I never was taken out of their character by how they were conveying what they were reading. You know, you couldn't tell they were just reading a script in a booth with somebody else or something. It felt like all those characters were alive, like a live action. So a 10 from me as well. It's a phenomenal movie.
Yeah, this is, this is good. They spent a very long time actually working on this movie. So a lot of the coloring and everything, I didn't want to bring up the beginning, but I'll go ahead and say it now. Like I heard that they actually did hand paint a lot of that stuff in. It might've still been on a computer screen, but they went and they hand touched pretty much every single thing that's in this movie. So when you're talking about, you know, the time that they spent on making sure that like, you know, the actors are actual acting and not, you know, just reading something. Yeah, I totally believe that, you know, everybody who was involved in this movie was 100% in and they wanted to make this. And it not only did it turn out to be a terrific movie, that I'm already set that Sony just needs to stop all their ambitious plans of trying to produce any other Spider-Man movies and do them in an animated form, because then I don't think they can lose, because they can even fish out what works and what doesn't work, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, this is a way that they can use Spider-Man and not have to worry about dealing with, you know, Marvel directly, because now we're in, you know, an animated universe. So you don't have to worry about, you know, having two different Spider-Men there. So this is their opportunity to do something with this. And I think that after the sequel comes out, as well as the spinoff, I hope that Sony will see that, you know, the whole like line of like animated series that they have can kick off and support itself. You know, outside, I mean, this should come out or about the same time that their next garbage movie comes out. And then they were like, okay, why are we even still trying to do this? See, I do not understand how Venom made so much money compared to something like this. This is a jewel in the rough. And you go when you're like, ah, I don't know what to think about it. And after you get done watching, you're like, holy crap, that was a really solid movie all the way through.
Yes.
And you watch Venom, you're like, what were they thinking?
Right.
And the only thing that does to them is saying, oh, hey, we can make money off of these side characters. Let's just go through the entire pantheon until we run out.
Gives them false hope.
Yeah, they're going to bury all these characters, and the next time a movie comes around, nobody's going to want to see it.
This is true.
But if they do it in animated fashion like they did this, then I do believe that they can keep things more afloat.
I agree. So, this is their wheelhouse right here. I mean, there shouldn't be any question about that. John, anything else?
Clearly, if you're listening to this, that means you've seen this movie. If you're listening to this and don't care about spoilers, go see the movie anyway. Stay all the way to the end. There's two different credit scenes, but the one with 2099 is all the way at the very, very end. And yeah, man, just enjoy yourself. It's a great movie.
I was the only person that stayed to the very end in my theater. I was disappointed in everyone else.
Well, I mean, a lot of parents with kids, and they're just like, you need to get them out. But, you know, Desmond, fortunately, my son, he knows that there's stuff at the end, because I talk about it all the time. And so he's like, is there something at the end? I'm like, yeah, hold on a second. I have to look it up myself, because you know what? For whatever reason, I didn't look at this going into it. And I'm like, and I should know better. It doesn't matter. If it's got a Marvel name on it, there's something at the end. But I wanted to make sure there was something at the very, very end.
Yes.
So, and I looked it up, and I'm like, yep, we're staying.
Smart dad. All right, John, thank you so much for joining me on this edition of our TV and movie reviews podcast. And possibly our next movie could be Aquaman if either one of us can carve out the time to go see it. So I think that'll be great. And then obviously we'll be rolling into Captain Marvel and then Avengers Endgame after that. So it should be a fun next few months of podcasting. For John, I'm Hank. Until the next time, we're signing off.
See you, everybody.
Tiger Prince Entertainment.
There ain't nothing else like it.